I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this edition of Triple B Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. Got a lot of stuff to get to tonight. I guess late afternoon, evening, it's kind of in that in-between range. It is 5 o'clock, so if you're sitting at home, it's time to put your feet up on the couch, maybe grab a drink or something, and just kind of hang out. If you're still at work, kind of like I am, you know, or you're in your car, let's ride out, let's get through the rest of today together, why not? And we are in the middle part of this week. We're in March now, which seems kind of crazy. We got some kind of crazy stuff coming up in March. NCAA basketball season, that's just coming to a close. The conference tournaments coming up soon. We'll talk more about those next week as, teams finish up their regular seasons. And we've got, on the other end of the spectrum, we got baseball, real baseball. The Giants were on the field today in Scottsdale playing their first Cactus League game. Jeff Samardzija, the free agent signee, was on the hill for a couple innings today. He pitched two innings, got a W for the Giants as they won against the Angels by a score of 4-1 in Scottsdale. So off to a good start for them. There's a couple of kind of lingering injury problems. Matt Cain and Hunter Pence still not back in the lineup, but both of their injuries don't seem to be long-term concerns. So hopefully they will get back on the field soon, and it's definitely good to see Jeff Samardzija out there. So for the rest of the show this afternoon, we got a bunch of football talk today. Talk about the recent franchise taggees as the deadline to franchise tags was earlier this week. Got a couple of big names, Kirk Cousins, Von Miller, amongst others, that were put in the tag. And on the other side, there were some veteran players that were released, some surprising, some not very surprising, to say the least. And we'll talk about where those players might go and where these guys' options are for their careers. And we're going to have some NBA talk. Man, the Warriors, I know we talked about them last week, but man, they just keep on rolling. They played another pretty good game last night without Stephen Curry and Andre Iguodala. Got a really just kind of a hard-fought win last night against a pretty good Atlanta Hawk team. It was on home floor, but anytime you can pick up a win against a quality opponent with some of your best players on the bench, definitely a good sign for them. They have another tough matchup tomorrow night coming up against Oklahoma City. Talk about that. Talk about some comments that Charles Barkley made about the NBA and where it is right now. We got Carmelo Anthony in the news as well. So So we're headed with that, and we'll have our Brewery of the Week coming up in the last segment of the show as well. So that's kind of where we're headed generally on our topics for today. So a lot of sports today, so buckle up and let's get ready. Let's get right into it. We got football to start. Like I mentioned, franchise tag deadline was this week. The franchise tag is basically a number that's brought up saying that this is, it's a one-year deal, basically, and it's almost like a max contract deal for that 1 year. Basically, you're paying that player a premium number for X position. So, and most of the times, you'll see quarterbacks, wide receivers, star defensive ends, corners, running backs, those type of players are the ones that usually get it. But sometimes you'll see teams use it on kind of random players. Like I saw the Baltimore Ravens used it on their kicker, Justin Tucker. I thought that was kind of an interesting move, especially because he didn't have a very good year this year either. But it's kind of something that NFL teams use as kind of a fail-safe. If they're still working on a deal with a player and they probably still have plans to make a deal with that player, then they will, and they can't quite get to a position where they are comfortable with the negotiations, they'll almost, the franchise tag is almost in a way like a Band-Aid, kind of putting something on, you know, take the problem away for a short amount of time, you know, so after the fact, you can go back and fix it, you know, and do whatever you need to do with it. And that's kind of what the Redskins did with Kirk Cousins, their young quarterback. I mean, the man deserved to get paid. He was getting paid around $600,000 from his rookie contract. And, you know, he definitely established himself as a solid starter in the NFL last year, led the team to the playoffs, and was just a good option all year long and gave the Redskins something I feel like they've been looking for. They thought they had it with RG3 after his rookie year. Then his knee imploded, basically. And we, who knows if we'll ever see RG3 as a starting quarterback in the league. That's still to be seen. But Kirk Cousins has stepped in and has figured it out and really has given the Redskins an identity, which is something that they haven't had for a long time. And I don't think a lot of people were expecting them to find for a very long time. Another player, Von Miller, I mean, maybe not a big surprise. You would, you know, his services will definitely be well sought after. I mean, just after the two games he had in the playoffs alone, 2.5 sacks in both the AFC, and the Super Bowl. So, and the just a, you know, fantastic player. That Josh Norman was another player, cornerback from the NFC champion Panthers, Alshon Jeffrey from the Bears. These are just all guys that these teams just can't afford to let go. And, you know, and if you can't work out a deal like these guys have, then this is a way to keep those players around. Eric Berry, I thought it was really cool to see Eric Berry from Kansas City just because of where he's come from in the last year. Like, just fighting cancer, you know, and, you know, we weren't even sure if we were going to see him on a football field again, you know. Cancer isn't just something that you can brush off your shoulder. It's, you know, as we know, it's a very serious disease, and he was able to bounce back and play his best football this season with Kansas City. And yeah, their season didn't end probably the way they would have liked after getting hot, winning 12 games in a row. But if you're Eric Berry, getting himself right back to where he was, man, that's huge for him. And looking at the other end of the spectrum now, of players that were let go, veteran players that were let go, a couple big names to talk about. Mario Williams, the defensive end from the Buffalo Bills. He came over in a free agent deal, a huge free agent deal a couple years ago from the Houston Texans. Played pretty well when he was on the field, but similarly to when he was on the Texans, also had some injury issues as well, and they have a plethora of young defensive players in their front seven, so, and they would like to keep some of those players, and sometimes when you get in that type of a situation, when you have young, talented players that are playing on these rookie deals and, you know, are frankly underpaid, these guys that are veteran players that already have gotten that big money are the guys that end up getting let go so that you can pay the younger guys. And that's exactly as what happened to Mario Williams here. I definitely think he can still play. And if you're Mario Williams, he's probably thinking that he can go get one more big deal, a big money deal, somewhere else before he starts getting older and things start looking more like league minimum type contracts for him. But he's definitely not in that category yet, I wouldn't think. And I definitely think there are some teams out there that could definitely use his services. The Chicago Bears come to mind right away, a team that struggled to have a pass rush this season. The Atlanta Falcons is another team that might really need some help up front in their front four, especially Dan Quinn trying to find something with that defensive pass rush a season ago. They tried to address it in the draft with Vic Beasley, and he was a little bit up and down. And really, you can't put it all on Vic Beasley in Atlanta either, because he didn't really have that much help, as the Falcons just really struggled, and they have for the last couple years, have really struggled to rush the passer on defense. And that's the reason Quinn was brought in there in the first place, was to fix that defense. He had that defensive mentality from coaching over with Seattle, with Legion of Boom and that whole bit. And he was brought over there to try to, you know, it's kind of crazy to say that, hey, I want you guys to be like exactly like Seattle, but with the offense they have, Matty Ice is a great quarterback. They got a great young running back in Devontae Freeman. They have great wide receiver. I'm going to get to another now former Falcon in just a minute. They still have Julio Jones on the outside, and it's just a talented offensive team. They did just let go of a mainstay player, another player on this list of veterans that have been let go. This one surprised me a little bit. Roddy White has been released by the Atlanta Falcons, the 34-year-old wide receiver. This definitely seemed to look like a money move, as White still had 2 years left on his deal. But the Falcons will only save $2 million in the cap from this move, which that's why it makes me think a little bit, like, what? $2 million? For a guy that's been probably the best wide receiver in the history of your franchise. He leads the franchise in receiving yards already and has just been a mainstay in your franchise. Has made the Pro Bowl 4 times. And sometimes with these players, you know, you see it like last year, Houston got rid of Andre Johnson, and it proved to be the right move, as Andre Johnson really didn't do much of anything in Indianapolis this past year. But I'm not sure if the same is true with Roddy White. I think Roddy White still has something left in the tank, and in the right situation, I think he could really support some wide receiving cores in the NFL. A team that comes to mind right away, again, I mentioned them with Mario Williams, but the Chicago Bears. The wide receiver position is another position that they don't have much depth. If you would have thought that a couple years ago, I wouldn't have bought that when they had Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall. They decided to get rid of Brandon Marshall. I'm sure that's a move that the Bears are still wondering why they made, but they have Alshon Jeffrey, so he's your number one guy. And if you bring in a guy like Roddy White, it would be very similar to the situation they had in Atlanta with White, where Julio Jones is the guy, and Roddy White would understand that, but he can still contribute, and the Bears still have a quarterback in Jay Cutler that can get him the ball. He's not as consistent as most fans of the Bears would like, but everybody knows how big of an arm that guy has got. And when you give a quarterback like a Jay Cutler, or the Packers might be another team, you know, their wide receiver depth was definitely challenged after they lost Jordy Nelson. And the Packers don't know where they're going to be with Jordy Nelson next year, so that might be a good option to try to fill the void a little bit, give Aaron Rodgers another weapon. So I definitely think there are some teams out there that could use a Roddy White. And guys like Roddy White don't just grow on trees. And another team just to throw in for the heck of it, I mean, it seems like ever since Randy Moss that every time a veteran wide receiver leaves a team that they've been with for a while, that New England gets thrown in. I mean, Randy Moss, you know, Chad Ochocinco also went there, didn't really work out. And, I mean, Steven Jackson, yeah, he's a running back, but he's another veteran player. He went over there, and we've seen it with the Patriots before. The Patriots do have a need. We saw that last year in the playoffs, how Julian Edelman and Gronk necessarily isn't all the Patriots need. Maybe they do need another weapon, and Brandon LaFell didn't seem to be the option that Pats thought. So maybe that's a direction that they're looking to go in. And sure, will be interesting to watch where those free agents land and what some of the big moves coming up in this offseason will be. I'm not expecting as crazy as an NFL free agency period as we saw last year with the splash moves like Ndamukong Suh, but there will definitely be some players out there in the market and teams out there that I feel will be more aggressive than they have been in the past. The Bears come to mind, and the Packers. Those two teams seem to be coming up a lot, but you never know. And the 49ers, they might be looking to make a different move to try something different. They have a lot of stuff to figure out, and a team, a new philosophy coming in with Chip Kelly, so that'll be interesting to watch. But one other note I wanted to touch on about football in general before we hit a break was, I know that the Ivy League isn't usually thrown into a conversation that has to do with sports per se, but especially not football, as the Ivy League, they don't do any type of a postseason at all. So that kind of takes a lot of the oomph, I would say, out of their football prowess. But they will be trying something next year, and this has gotten a fair amount of attention, but they're going to implement a policy next season that will not allow any form of tackling while in practice during the season. During the season, the regular season we're talking. So the way that it was talked about is that this will not include spring practices or two-a-days before the year. It's just during the season. And obviously this will definitely have some pros and cons. A couple of the pros I think of right off the bat, it's pretty obvious, I would think, that with so much talk we've had about CTE and head trauma and the importance of keeping football players safe, that this definitely would make sense to do this, especially having it be something you do during the season, because, you know, it's during the season when your body is taking abuse at least once a week. You know, every Saturday you're going out there and you're butting heads with whoever your team is playing. And so it makes sense to have something like that implemented then. But on the con side of it, at least it could be a con, is that when you're not practicing, the only places that you're tackling is in a game, that could be also trouble. I understand that tackling in practice is not going to be at the same intensity as a game, but you can say that about just about anything in sports. When from practice to a game, the intensity is up. Your nerves are up. Everything is turned up a notch from practice to a game. And sure, it's easy to say that you're not, you know, going full out tackling in practices anyway. You know, the quarterback always has the red jersey on. A lot of times those guys are out there and just shells meaning pads and shorts with no, you know, pads around their ankles or legs or any of that. And when they're not practicing tackling all the time, my general thought process is that they might get worse at tackling. And when you get worse at tackling and you're not getting taught how to tackle the right way, that's how injuries would occur. You know, guys are thrown into situations where, you know, you have to like be almost shy away from hitting during the entire week, and then you expect the players just to, at the snap of a finger, just turn into a football tackling machine. It just doesn't quite, to me, logically doesn't work that way. You would think that these guys would need more, you know, hands-on practice, even if it isn't, you know, full-speed tackling, which in practice it wouldn't be. But just getting used to the techniques and, you know, learning the craft. And because it is, there is a right way to tackle and there's a wrong way to tackle. And it's not something that football players, even if they've been playing since they were 10, it's not something that they can pick up overnight. So I would leave it with that. I think the NFL and the rest of college football, even high school, that the rest of the football world should watch and listen to what comes out from these practices from the Ivy League and, you know, approach it with an open mind. See if they like it. Is it a good thing? Is it not a good thing? Is it going to work? Because this, I mean, it is a serious issue we're trying to look at here with CTE and all this other stuff going on. So it's not... So it is kind of I'll look at it as it's a trial and error type of thing. Let's see if this works. And if it doesn't work, you know, it's just time to go look for some more solutions. And that's where I think that the football world is at with this issue right now. So with that, we're going to head to a break. You're listening to Triple B, Bros, Brews, and Bleachers here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have some basketball news and our bet pick of the week. So stay tuned on Penguin Radio.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. You know, I help people solve difficult problems every day, but one problem has me stumped: childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. Luckily, the Feeding America network of local food banks collects surplus food, giving hope to hungry children and their families. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Meet Dennis. He just had a really bad day and is about to go over the edge with rage.
I am untethered and my rage knows no bounds!
This aggressive behavior has become all too common. According to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, nearly 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner in the U.S. during 1 year. So don't be like Dennis. Join the fight against domestic violence today.
Hey kids, let mom help with your science project.
This new mom wants her kids' science project to thrive. Too bad she hasn't cracked a science book since 1985.
A metathesis reaction?
Compounds, mixtures, and elements. Even this baking soda volcano is too big of an experiment. Whoa. Now she's completely forgotten the periodic table. Now she's burning a hole through the kitchen table.
Burning with science.
But her kids' love for their mom is truly transparent. Proof you don't have to be perfect to be the perfect parent.
you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of siblings in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. This is Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. I'm your host, Jeff Safford, here on a, I guess I should say, a decent afternoon here in Northern California on the beautiful campus of Dominican University of California. It's kind of a weird weather day, to be honest with you. It's almost kind of muggy out here. Clouds, got some more rain coming in the forecast, so kind of seeing the weather pattern shift is, I guess that's the best thing I can come up with, is what's going on today. But just another day here at Dominican University. We want to give a shout out to both our basketball teams. They both made it to the PacWest tournament this weekend. The ladies are the number 5 seed, the men's team are the number 6 seed. The men's team clinched their spot on the last day of the regular season on last Saturday against Fresno Pacific with a win. And I also saw a couple of past PacWest honorees this season for the men's side. Christopher Schwartz Edmison, Josh Ramirez, and Matt Hayes, all 3 earning PacWest honors. So congratulations to those 3 guys, and to both the ladies and the men's for making it to the PacWest tournament. The men will play first. They are on their way to Irvine right now, and it's probably a pretty good chance that they're both teams are already there in Irvine now, but the men's will get things started at 12:30 tomorrow. They're playing against Cal Baptist, and the women will be going at it at 7:30. They are playing against BYU Hawaii. So that should be fun to see how both of those teams can do. The women have already finished out a season, or they're not done yet, but already to this point, they have the highest winning percentage of have the most wins, excuse me, of any Dominican women's team in the D2 era. So that is a big accomplishment for the program and for the team. And having been able to have the pleasure of covering that team this season, doing a lot of play-by-play for both the men's and women's team, it's cool to see them have success. So shout out to them. Congratulations in Irvine. And I will hope to hear a lot about some more great success for that team in the future. Now, looking ahead to where we're going on our show, we're going to stick in the basketball world, and we're going to start with some NBA talk about Charles Barkley, what he said, talk about the Dubs, and we'll also hit on some college basketball. Tonight, there will be featured in my bet of the week. Hey, I'm 2-0 for my pick so far. Picked Duke over UNC in the first week. Picked University of Colorado over Arizona last week. Both of those have turned out well in my two picks. So we'll see if I can keep the streak going, keep it alive. So we'll get to all that in this segment, and we'll start with the Dubs. Man, they just keep rolling along. They've kept that streak alive last night of the victories at home. They did it without Steph Curry, who's out with that ankle injury. He tweaked it a little bit last Saturday night in the win against Oklahoma City. He did come back in that game, as many of you already probably know, and hit that absolutely crazy 32-foot jump shot at the buzzer. I guess I should say with 0.6 seconds. So it's not technically the buzzer, but I would imagine that pretty much everybody in the arena knew the game was over once that shot was hit by Curry. And Iguodala, Andre Iguodala, was also out of the game last night, and they played a pretty good Atlanta team. They were one of the best teams in the East last season. They've dropped a little bit from last year, but definitely still very dangerous, especially from the outside. You got guys like Kyle Korver out there, and Teague is a good complete point guard. He can score from almost anywhere on the floor, and even their bigs can shoot the outside shot. As you know, you'll see Al Horford step out, shoot some open threes if it's open, and you know, so a pretty good offensive team. And you're thinking a night like last night when they're shorthanded, this should be a game that Atlanta can pick up a win in, but the Warriors able to hang around. Draymond Green hit a crazy three at the end of overtime, and Steve Kerr said it best. They just kind of grinded it out and just played hard for every single minute of that game. And you know, it's games like that that makes you think, like, maybe this can happen. Maybe the Warriors can beat that record of the Chicago Bulls for the most regular season wins. You know, when you look at game like that and the win they had against Miami where they were way behind, the win against Oklahoma City, Steph Curry hits the crazy shot, and it just seems like every obstacle that gets thrown at this team, they just, you know, jump right over it and just dominate everyone. And there's just not much else you can say about this team at this point. And are there teams out there that can challenge? Absolutely. We've seen Oklahoma City really take the Warriors to the brink. And, I mean, let's not forget that game on Saturday. The Thunder led for the vast majority of the game, and the Warriors just had to fight and scratch and claw just to stay in the game. And they're able to pull one out with some miraculous gameplay by one of the league's best. But it's, you know, but they could have easily lost that game. And sometimes when you look at great teams, and a lot of times when you look back at a great team, they go through these games where they probably should have lost, but they somehow, some way, find ways to win games. And that's what the Warriors are doing right now. And that's what they did last night. I mean, that was not a conventional Warrior game. They were playing without two of their most important players, but they were still able to play through it and put a W in the column. And tomorrow night, another challenge upcoming. They got Oklahoma City coming to Oracle tomorrow night at 7:30. So that'll be crazy. And who knows with the status of Steph Curry. A lot of people think that Curry sat that game out against Atlanta so that he would be 100% ready for Oklahoma City. But that is kind of speculation, so we're not going to go into that too much. And with or without Curry, I think that'll be a very interesting matchup just because of these two teams having just got together within 5 days and having the come out be the impact of the outcome of the last game will definitely be fresh on both teams' minds and will definitely play into it. I probably more so for Oklahoma City. They probably will be looking more for revenge, and they're in a good spot and in that crazy Western Conference. And talking about the rest of the NBA, I thought this was very interesting, hearing from Charles Barkley and in conversation with Mike Golic on the radio today. He was talking about the strength of the NBA and that there is four or five teams in the league. He named the Warriors as one. He mentioned the Clippers, the Spurs, the Cavaliers, that top echelon of the league. And he said if those two teams are not playing each other during a regular season NBA game that he has no interest in that the rest of the NBA stinks, basically, is what he's said, and that the level of play is nowhere near with those other teams than it is with the elite. And, you know, I thought that was interesting for him to say, and that basketball, the basketball this season was quote, terrible, is the way he said it. And, you know, I definitely respect the opinion of Charles Barkley. I mean, he's the round mound of rebound. I mean, he's one of the best, you know, forwards who ever suited up in the NBA with the Phoenix Suns. And basically the only thing he didn't accomplish in his career was win a ring. And, you know, you can either put that on the back burner or make that a really important point when you're talking about a guy like Charles Barkley. But, you know, I'm not really sure where I stand with it, because when you look at any sport, whether it be basketball, football, baseball, you have the teams that are the contenders, quote unquote, and you have the teams that are the pretenders, the teams that you know that when push comes to shove, even if they make it into the playoffs, most likely, unless they pull off a miraculous upset, that they're going to be, you know, beaten. You know, they're the teams that the number eight seeds that get swept in the first round of a playoff series, or the Houston Texans in an NFL playoff game, or the, you know, that they might make it, but you know that Brian Hoyer's just going to screw up and throw a bunch of interceptions, or something is probably going to go wrong that will keep you from winning the game. And they're a team that, you know, they might be able to compete and, you know, have a winning season, but when it comes down to it, when you get to the playoffs, that Ricky Bobby's father always said it best, I think, quote, if you ain't first, you're last. And I mean, I know that was kind of a joke, but in a way with sports, I've always thought it was kind of true. You know, if you're not hoisting the trophy at the end of the year, in theory, what do you really have to brag about? And you know, and looking at the rest of the sports world, I think that's true. You know, you got usually the four or five teams that are the true contenders. Those are the ones that are going to be there at the end of the year, and the rest of the league just is not at that same level. And at the end of the day, that's how it works out. You know, you play through the playoffs, you know, a couple teams get thoroughly dominated, and then you're left with the top two, three, four teams, you know, and those couple of teams battle it out, and at the end of it all, you got yourself a champion. And it's usually not one of those lower seeded teams. You know, once in a while you see the Cinderellas. You know, it's much more common, I would think, in college basketball, just because amateur sports is definitely less predictable. But it's, you know, but it's not something that's crazy to think that there's four or five teams that are just at a different level in a specific league than everybody else. And sometimes it's unavoidable. I mean, sure, you want to see parity and you want to see teams compete, and it happens. I mean, it's not like these lower teams in the NBA are just dead teams walking. They're still going out there competing. They can still win on any given night. I mean, and you look at the teams that the Warriors have lost to this season. They have losses to the Bucks and the Detroit Pistons and just teams that you wouldn't really expect them to lose to. And they've beaten all the good teams. They've beaten the Clippers, the Spurs, the Cavaliers, the Miami Heat, you know, the teams that are up towards the top of the NBA. But they've lost to these teams also that are lower. So it's kind of, that shows you how there is a little bit of parity in the NBA and how these teams still are talented. And even though they're not as talented as the Warriors, which is saying a lot, but there's still teams that can get it done and can play good basketball. And I think that's the key to it all. To wrap it up, I understand what Charles is saying, that he would love to see more competition between the teams in the middle of the pack and the teams up top. But to say that there's just no competition and the rest of the NBA completely sucks beyond the top four or five teams, I just don't think that's accurate. And the basketball players that are in the NBA are still the best players in the world. So there's always crazy things that can happen that can lead to a team winning. And I mean, just look at a game like last night. The Lakers have struggled all year long and have had a terrible season. Everybody's calling D'Angelo Russell, their draft pick out of Ohio State, calling him a bust, you know. And then he goes out last night against the Brooklyn Nets. Kobe isn't playing or not starting, and he goes out there and puts up 39, and all of a sudden he's got ice in his veins, you know, and he's the next big rookie thing. So you don't know what's going to happen on a night-to-night basis in the NBA. Russell could go back out there tomorrow night or whenever the next game the Lakers play and put up 5 points. That's just kind of how sports works and part of what makes it fun. And kind of to segue into the unpredictability of the sports world, we're going to go for now our bet of the week. Like I mentioned, I've actually won the last two things. I shouldn't say won because I myself didn't actually wager anything. I'm more as like an advice giver, so I'm not quite Brent Musburger territory here. Not that I think what Brent Musburger does is necessarily a bad thing. I think it's the way he talks about the wagering, and his audience knows that he likes to dabble in that world. And as a broadcaster, he doesn't have any control over how a game goes. He's just there to tell you how it goes. So I don't see any moral issue there with it. And you know, the way he talks about it, I think it's kind of tongue in cheeky. You know, it's kind of, you know, that he's got money one way or the other on a game, and when something happens that's disappointing to him, and he reacts during the broadcast. And you know, if you're a fan sitting at home, you want to be entertained. And when Musburger's, you know, getting angry about, you know, a spread not going his way or, you know, whatever he's mad about, then it's, you know, it adds some kind of extra fun to the broadcast. So my look this week for tonight, more specifically, I'm going to take a look at third week, and I guess I've had success the last 2 weeks with college hoops, and that's one of the main sports in the spotlight right now, going right into March. I mean, we are in March right now, in March Madness and all that, so I'm going to go with a feeling, I guess you could say superstition right here, and stick with college basketball. This game starts in about 15 minutes, and I'm going to bring up, so if you are going to do something with, maybe pop on your computer real quick and get on it, but I'm going to take a look at the Oregon Ducks against UCLA, and I'm sure a lot of people know that I have a link to the University of Oregon if you've listened to my program or any of my programs from the past, so I know, it's going to sound like I'm a little bit of a homer here, but when you look at what the Ducks have done this season, they could clinch the Pac-12 with a win, so they've had a fabulous season, and they're playing a team in UCLA who's really underachieved, I would say. I mean, from the season they had a year ago, they were a pretty young team last year. Nobody was expecting too much of them. They are able to sneak into the tournament as a pretty low seed, and they had some success. They made it through a couple rounds and won a few games that people didn't expect them to, and a few of those players, Alford being one, the coach's son, coming back, and people are thinking they're going to be able to build on the season they had last year, and they have really kind of sputtered down the stretch as well, sitting at a 15-14 mark. But even though on paper the Ducks look like the much better team here, the point spread, with the game being in Westwood down in UCLA, the point spread is not large at all. The Ducks only favored by 3.5 points. And when you see a spread like that, it makes me think that you should take a look at the straight up bet, or other people call, I've seen online mentioned as the money line. And that means that you take that whatever team you want straight up. So the spread is out the window. So you would just be saying that I am betting that Oregon is going to win straight up, period. And that's what betting on the money line would mean. And in this case, with the spread not being big in either direction, this definitely looks like a good game to bet on, because the smaller the spread is with the money line, the better the payout. So, you know, obviously you shouldn't make a great payout if you were going to bet that the, you know, I'm just talking hypotheticals here, but if the Warriors, let's say, were going to play against, let me think about a really bad team, the Lakers. Let's just say they're going to play the Lakers at Oracle, and the spread was 18 points, let's say, in favor of the Warriors. You wouldn't be getting a great payout for the money line in a bet like that, because the odds of that happening are very high. See, where this game is kind of a sneaky one, the Ducks and UCLA, is that the Ducks probably have a really good chance of beating UCLA tonight, but the point spread doesn't necessarily say that. So you can make a decent payout if you bet the money line on the Ducks in this situation. And that's what I think you should do. Dylan Brooks, possible Pac-12 player of the year. Boucher has been awesome down low for them. And they're playing with a lot of confidence. They have a lot to play for to try to clinch that Pac-12 regular season title before they face off against a really tough USC team later on this weekend. So I definitely think Dana Altman's team can get it done tonight. And that is my look of the night. The Oregon Ducks on the money line in about 10 minutes. So we'll see if I can keep the streak going. I'm kind of interested to see myself, as we're going to head now to our last segment. We're going to head to one last break. Before we do, though, we're going to talk about our brewery of the week. Our last two breweries, our first show, we did Moylan's over in Novato. We did the Bear Republic Brewery in Healdsburg, California, north of here last week. And this week, we're going to go across the bay. That's right, over towards Oakland this week, kind of moving all around the Bay Area with this brewery tour along our show. And we're going around the Oakland area. You're going to have to put on your thinking cap to where we could be looking at next. So you're listening to Bros, Brews, and Bleachers here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. We will be right back after a couple of PSAs.
About music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. The Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and helps get it to kids in need, but they can't do it alone. Find out how you can help at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. The difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. Studies prove that reading to a child regularly dramatically improves reading skills. And kids who read well by third grade are 4 times as likely to graduate. So United Way is calling for 1 million volunteers over the next 3 years. We're asking you to step up, make a pledge, tutor a child who needs help, mentor a kid who needs someone on their side. Volunteer to read to children. Make a difference. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Entire communities improve. path to success or failure starts long before graduation day, and the difference between a graduate and a dropout could be you. Be a reader, tutor or mentor, give, advocate, volunteer, live united, take the pledge. Go to liveunited.org now. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Triple B Bros, Brews, and Bleachers on the radio home of Dominican Athletics, radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Jeff Safford, as we are here on a beautiful Wednesday night. Sun's gone down. We're starting to get some longer days, though, so that's always nice. And got spring break coming up, kind of crazy to think. Dominican students will all be off this next week for spring break. So just to note that I won't talk for everyone on our staff here at Penguin Radio, but I will sure that many students' shows will not be taking place next week due to spring break. And my show will be part of that list. So sorry, I will not be able to spend next week with you guys. I'll definitely miss you, but we'll be working on some senior capstone work. We got senior theses due at the end of this semester for all the graduating seniors, so I'm working on that. And we don't have any Penguin softball coming up this next week either. I, of course, work on Penguin softball. Myself and Lizette Cabrera will be with you. Our next game's not coming till the middle of this month, around, I believe, March 16th is the next home game. Yes, it is, against Cal Baptist and then Dixie State. The national championship game runner-up from a season ago, they're coming into town that week as well, so some tough matchups coming up for the Penguins. They will be on a Hawaii road trip, along with the tennis team as well, during spring break. And the lacrosse team, they're going to SoCal during spring break. So Penguin Athletics is going to be all over the place over the break. And who knows, maybe we'll see a Dominican men's or women's team taking place in the NCAA tournament. We'll find out after the PacWest tournament ends this weekend. So getting to our last segment, we only got a few minutes left. We're going to look at our brewery of the week. And like I mentioned right before break, Moylan's was week one, Bear Republic Brewery was week two, and the brewery that we're going to be taking a look at this week, mentioned we're going across the bay. You got to drive over the Richmond Bridge. Maybe not a bright idea at this time of day with all the bad traffic, but the brewery we're looking at is Drake's. Drake's over in San Leandro. And it's an interesting place and one of those breweries that I think what makes it appealing is that it's a beer that's available in most stores. You know, if you're going to your local Safeway, 7-Eleven, United Markets, corner liquor store, there's a very good chance that you're going to find Drake's, and that's true around most of the state of California. Drake's IPA has made a pretty big name for itself. That's pretty much their flagship beer, I would say, and it is a pretty good product. You know, I would say it's comparable to, say, a Loggy IPA, a Lagunitas, where it's a IPA that's not going to knock you over with the alcohol, but it's still got that nice body that you're looking for in a craft IPA as well. And so the availability is there, but when you go to the brewery itself, it still has that small, you know, community micro brew feel to it. And that's what really I like about it. And it's a fun place to go with your friends. It's not, you know, super uppity. You know, it's not something that you really have to get super dressed up for. It is just kind of a neighborhood hangout. And it's one thing to mention about the place. If you're going to go to the brew house, to clarify, their barrel brew house, they do also have a beer garden at a different location, but I'm talking the original Drake's Brewery location, is that it is a little bit of an adventure to find this place. I will say that, as that it's located close to a big shopping center around in San Leandro, but it is kind of tucked away in the back behind these. It's kind of in an industrial area, because the brew house itself is kind of an industrial building that they have retrofitted into a barrel house. And when you go in there, it's a nice casual feel, and it's a place where you could, you know, do a lot of different things. You know, you can go there. You know, I went and hung out with a couple of buddies, you know, and, you know, they got a big giant projector screen where they always have, you know, the Warriors, the Giants, you know, whatever game's on. They always, you know, so you can go watch the game. It's a pretty cool location, you know, with the barrel room. If you've ever been to a barrel room at a winery, just to give you an image, it's very similar to that look. And, you know, and they have lights hanging from the barrels, and it kind of gives a little bit of a intimate feel. So maybe might be a good, like, casual date. Like, especially, I would say it would be a perfect place for, like, a first date. It's not super crazy, but you can still relax and have a good time. And it just has that kind of feel to it, you know, that you're not going to some crazy facility. You know, you're sitting in the barrel room, you know, drinking beer right straight from the tap. You know, it's old school. It's, you know, it's right from the source. It's nothing. And I like that about it. And a lot of these, you know, it's kind of becoming a common thing that a lot of these places are going this kind of way, or this casual kind of brew house right on site type of a place. And the one thing that does make it a little bit unique is that food is involved. A lot of these types of little smaller operations don't have drinks at all. Or I mean, drinks. It would be hard for a brewery not to have a drink, but have food. But this place, it does. They have kind of an interesting way how they do it. They have a little food truck connected that's theirs, that's connected to the building, and they just cook all of their food in this little food truck. And when you order your food, they give you one of those little buzzer beeper things, and it just goes off. And, you know, and they get all like bar snacks, and, you know, they got burgers and chili dogs, and, you know, some homemade chips. And I mean, it's not a super big menu, but, you know, if you go there maybe later at a night, definitely if you're getting the munchies after a couple of drinks, and they got you hooked up for you. All right, so Drake's Brewery, the brew of the week. If you are listening and you know someone that owns a brewery, or you own a brewery yourself and you want to be featured on the brewery segment of our show, go to radio.dominican.edu and find the contact us page there and let us know. I would love to bring you on and let you be a part of our show and be a part of Penguin Radio. But as I mentioned, we are out of time, and we're going to be going back to music after I get off the air. But thanks, everybody, for tuning in. For Jeff Safford, thanks for listening to Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. We'll see you again after spring break. Have a good night, everybody. Lights fade out, all the sinners crawl, so they do.